All right, guys, welcome back to the Onside Inside podcast. I'm your host, Corey Tompkins, and today we've got Mitch Pocklington from...
Nailed it, mate.
Yeah, nailed it. All right, we've got Mitch in here today. So a little bit about Mitch. Mitch runs a building company up here in Brisbane called MitCon. And do you want to give our listeners anyway a bit of a backstory about yourself and, you know, a little bit of a brief rundown of what you actually do up here and all that sort of stuff?
So we run a custom building company. And in the last sort of 12 to 18 months, we've transitioned a bit into doing our own development projects now. So buy, knock down, build and sell. So it's been a long journey to get there, but I'm a chippy by trade. I started out in the industry as a cabinet maker, a school-based cabinet maker. Did that for a few years and then sort of progressed along as you do. And, you know, went out, got my builder's license, became a builder and then started my own business and ground from there and worked my way up.
So in your earlier days when you first started, take us back to that. So did you, how old were you when you started your cabinet? Did you see that through or did you?
Well, I wanted to be a chippy, to get a carpentry apprenticeship, but, I grew up and, out in Logan, Browns Plains, lower socioeconomic sort of community, and there wasn't any opportunities for me for a carpentry apprenticeship.
Yeah.
So my voc ed teacher, brought to me a cabinet making apprenticeship at that point in time. And it wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it was a foot in the door. So I jumped on it and took that. I used to ride my skateboard up to the factory at, 5 a.m. in the morning and then sweep the floors and change the broken louvers and, I'd get to edge a cabinet door every now and then. But it was good. I learned a lot out of that. I did that from probably late grade 9, early grade 10 until about grade 11, 12. And then I turned up one Friday morning and, there was no one there. There was locks on the door and they just shut up shop and didn't tell the school-based kid. I rang my mate and I said, what's going on? Where is everyone? He goes, didn't they tell you on Friday? That's it. They're done. They've gone under. So that was the end of that. And then, I was sort of back to the drawing board at that point. So I had an opportunity through a family member to go and do surveying. I went and, did surveying, finished school, finished year 12, which I was pretty lucky to actually finish. So I finished year 12 and then went and did surveying for 3 years and studied surveying as well. And that's what led me up onto the pipelines after that. It was a bit of a on and off sort of journey. Did that. Went and lived overseas after I did 3 years of surveying. Went and lived in Canada for 6 months.
Man, it's crazy. You're just telling us the journey that that you're currently on at the moment to get back to what you are now. So you went up to the gas mines. And then to Canada.
Then after that, I just wasn't real happy doing that. So I went and just lived in Canada and, I guess a lot of, a lot of people do is I sort of did it. A lot of people do that straight after school, but I sort of...
And how old were you then?
I think I was probably 20, 21. Yeah, I had my 21st birthday in Canada. So,
yeah, sweet.
Yeah, it was a good time. It was awesome, just... real life experience. I learned a lot. That was the first time I'd ever been overseas was when I was 21 for first time I'd ever lived on my own. So I really, sort of jumped right into it and just took that whole life experience right in. So yeah, that was awesome. Did that for 6 months and then, I was sort of sitting in Canada and I was like, fuck, I really need to sort my life out, get some sort of qualification or do something. So I came back and tracked down a mature age carpentry apprenticeship.
Did you look for surveying jobs back here?
I did. I looked around, but it was sort of hit and miss, I went to uni and studied surveying for a year and figured out I didn't enjoy it. Wasn't, what I wanted to do. And so to get a surveying job, you sort of needed to be a qualified surveyor. I went back to what I enjoyed and what I knew, which was, carpentry and woodwork, you know, which I'd always been good at. So
yeah. And what was your journey like through getting that adult apprenticeship? Because I know a lot of guys struggle to get them. Like
So again, like I guess similarly to like when I was in school, there just wasn't much option around, you know. Like I found an ad for a carpentry apprenticeship, but it was with a stair builder. So Stephead Carpentry down in Slacks Creek. So it wasn't exactly what I wanted, but I thought, hey, look, this is the opportunity to keep progressing that journey.
Yeah.
So I took that and, you know, I went and I think I jumped back in as like a second year because my cabinet making, some of those codes like...
It's a lot just, especially in that first year, it's all just...
Yeah, like, it's like how to read plans use a hammer. I think I probably had like 5 or 6 course codes that sort of I could transfer over. So that enabled me to jump in as like a second year mature age apprentice. So I did stair building. Well, that was awesome. Like a lot of like apprentices these days like would never build a set of stairs. Like,
it's just how the industry is. Yeah. Like at the moment, like you don't.
Like stairs are,
it's like pitching roofs. Yeah. Like it's one of those things.
Yeah,
it's
you just don't do it. Yeah. So I built, I built spine beams, like winders, I built heaps of stairs like as a second or third year. Which was good. Like I enjoyed that, but I probably got to a point like maybe 18 months in where I was doing everything. Like I was setting.
It didn't take you long to.
Yeah, yeah. I was setting stringers on the CNC router. Like I was using the CNC router. I was trenching stringers by hand. Like I was doing everything on the floor. Like, that one of the qualified guys was doing. I looked around, I searched around and ended up getting myself into another apprenticeship. By that point, I was like third year sort of thing. And I jumped in and it was with a local builder around town. Red Chem, so I jumped in with them and finished off my apprenticeship. And I learned a lot there. Like, it was a traditional builder.
Mm-hmm.
You do a bit of everything, concreting, bits drainage, pieces, roofing, like all that core skill that, I feel like a carpenter should sort of know. Yeah.
And if you needed a set of stairs, you were there.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah. So I finished up my apprenticeship there. And then after that, I jumped out and did some, subcontracting and, supervising and did a few builds around Paddington, some architectural, bigger builds and, which was awesome. So it's good. I feel like I had a rounded, skill set and experience from all that sort of journey.
So when you were, just to give the guys that are listening, so when you were obviously in that process, by the sounds of it, you definitely didn't just fucking jump into it. Like you were trial and error, like heaps of different stuff.
But
you know what I mean? And I feel like you definitely weren't afraid to start over again because it is very humbling experience. Like for the guys that are starting an apprenticeship or that have already done something, like you literally are starting again.
Yeah.
Like you're starting from fucking zero again. It's a humbling experience when you got guys that are either younger than you that are already qualified or whatever. You got to suck up your ego and your pride.
100%. Like, even as a mature age, like I had mates in school that their dads were chippies. Their dad's dad was a chippy and they just had, it doesn't sound like much, but for someone who like I really enjoy building, like I love the industry, like for someone who wants like that opportunity and it's nowhere, it's, to have mates around you just like get offered an apprenticeship, like, or just have it handed down.
It's another way to look at it, eh? I've actually never really fucking thought about it because like his old man was chippy. Like I never really looked at it like that, eh? It was almost just, I guess like these, even this current day and age as well, like guys don't really look at it as that, like, as an opportunity per se, you know what I mean? They don't look at it as like, there are actually guys out there that want this.
Yeah.
And because a lot of guys just treat it like a fucking job, don't they?
I've had plenty of apprentices, like we had this, like it was a shitty job. Like we did 2 or 3 months of digging and footings and steel work and like rain. It was like probably the worst conditions ever, just slop.
Yeah.
And then he threw it in, like he didn't want to like hang around, which is fair enough, each to their own. But like a week and a half later, we got like $50,000 worth of packs of timber and big glue lamb beams for all exposed hand cut raft. Like, you know, an amazing frame that
it's all part of it. And that's something that I tell them all as well. Like, whether you're digging holes, you're cutting timber, you're doing some really nice, you know, detailed work.
Yeah.
You're moving boards for 2 days, whatever it is, you know what I mean? I think that sort of comes with maturity as well.
100%,
You will eventually close your eyes and look back and it will all just fucking go like this.
Yeah.
It all just molds into one and you soon realize that, you know, I already know, like, even the qualified guys that I've got now, they all know the same thing too. It doesn't matter. Like, it's all the same. It's all the same shit when you think about it. Like, carpentry, when you're a carpenter, it's all the same stuff. Whether you're digging a hole, you're doing some framing, you're doing some skirting. Yeah. Like, and I think that just comes with maturity, I think.
Yeah. I think it's 100% it's maturity, but I think, like, even myself, I'm guilty of it. Like, I try and remind myself, like, it's actually the journey through that whole process that is what makes it, you know, what it is. Mm. Like, you know, you might build a house and you get to the end of it, you might come back to put a door handle on and you get to see it finished.
Mm.
But you're there for a day, you know, like you're digging footings, you're framing a frame, like you're there months and months and months. Like, I think, you know, every now and then you need to remove yourself from being in a moment and actually appreciate it and just take it in, you know, because it's that journey. It's those months is what, like, you know, the industry or, you know, an apprenticeship or building is about.
That's it. And it's like, guys, almost like I deal with it as well, where people love to say, like, that's not a carpenter's job.
Yeah.
And if you're always looking for that shiny job where, you know, all you want to be doing is in the sun with your shirt off and framing, digging holes in the rain. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, if you're constantly just like trying to think about that, and you're only looking for that, you're going to hate your job.
Yeah.
And like, 100%. Cause I say to the boys, like, we can, like, I guarantee you, like, you know, you can say, like, for us, for instance, right now, a lot of our work's outside, it's pissing down rain.
Yeah.
In summertime, might be completely opposite. I might have a shit ton of inside work, but that's just how it fucking goes.
Yeah.
Like, you can't always...
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to sit in the moment and make the
most of it. 100%. You know? Like, yeah, enjoy it while it's there. Yeah. Enjoy it when the work's on. Enjoy it when the work's off.
When it's shit, just find the best in it and just crack on, you know.
Hey, so. If you're in the rain and it's cold, be thankful that it's not stinking hot and you're not sweating 100%, balls. So, So, throughout as you come to then your apprenticeship, you're now contracting, right? What I want to know is at what point did you have like a cornerstone moment? Was it a penny drop moment when you thought, you know, fuck it, I actually want to like work for myself? Like, and what sort of inspired you to do that? Was there people in and around you? How did all that sort of come
about?
Rather than actually, just like staying as a chippy? And
I actually haven't even considered when that moment hit. Like, I guess it might have been, you know, the late stages of my apprenticeship. Like, you know, I saw like successful businesses around me and people that I worked for, and, you know, sort of towards the end of my apprenticeship, I actually started looking around and inquiring about, you know, the builder's course.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, like the builder I was working for said, oh, like, it's probably not worth looking at until you've, you know, built a couple of houses or had a couple of houses built under your belt. But it sort of didn't deter me. Like, I kept looking at it, and I think
you can do the course at any point.
Yeah, you can do it as an apprentice.
I fucking tell all the boys to get it done. 100%.
I think it's the understanding, though, like, comes after you've been through.
It's the same as an apprenticeship when you really think about it, right? You do your apprenticeship, you get your Cert 3. Do you really know?
No, you don't. You learn it.
You learn it as you go. Yeah, like,
100%. Yeah. But I think it was like towards the end of my apprenticeship, I got qualified. I started subbing for a few months. I probably did 12 months of subbing, and then I started looking at doing my course. Mm. And then I did a bit of supervising, and, you know, like a few. I feel like the industry's changed, though. Like, when I was qualified, like, subbing as a chippy was like, I feel like it was a short term.
All right, guys, congratulations. You're halfway through this episode. I hope you guys are really enjoying it. But first, I just want to make a special thank you to Ideal Group Australia. Without them, I wouldn't be able to bring this podcast to you. So, special thank you. I hope you guys are enjoying it. Buckle in and get ready to listen to the end of this episode.
Geek, like, you know, I bounced around with a few builders. Like, you know, I'd subby, all right, we'd do this build. And then the builder would be like, oh, it's a bit quiet now, mate. Like, see you later. You'd go to the next builder, and like. Yep. Whereas now, it's like, I feel like being a carpenter, it's more a job, you know. Like, you're employed by a builder, and it's more legitimate. Like, I don't know. Would you find that? Or
I think yeah. Like for us, we don't run. None of our guys that we employ are on subbies. I don't use that subby model.
Neither do we. Like we employ all our guys.
Yeah, full time. Yeah. So
everyone's different, but I try and employ our guys on a salary, and it's usually like above wage, award wage anyway.
Yeah.
But it just allows me to budget that into a financial year.
Yeah.
So I do a budget, like I've even forecast the next 2-3 financial years with growth, and then even like a maintenance year where it's just like we're not growing, we're just chilling, we're just staying there, you know, because I feel like you can't always be growing and growing.
Yeah. It's very hard. Like it's very cash hungry too. Like it is very hard. Like for us, that's how we run it. we run off like a full-time wage sort of thing where it's like, you know, when the weeks are really long, they get paid for what they work.
Yeah.
And then when the weeks are short, they can take advantage of that as well. And I'm like, I'm not getting them just to sit in on site when it's pissing rain. So that's how we operate.
Yeah.
But I do know a lot of guys that run that subby model.
Yeah.
You know? When I was contracting for myself, same thing. You know what I mean?
It's weird, eh?
I'd go to a builder for like 2-3 months and then he'd go, like
next you go job, over here. Yeah.
But then we're even finding now that, you know, full reverse is that we're finding guys, like from the carpentry labor aspect, we're getting builders now ringing us saying, oh, can we get your chippies subby to them? But like for a full, like a longer duration.
Yeah.
So
I feel like it's an older school mentality. Yeah.
It's like, why take, like for my argument is always like, wouldn't you want the security? Like if you've got the work there to run five guys at a subby rate, right? Because not only are you paying a high rate when you have a subby.
Yeah.
Because right? they pay, yes, I get it. They pay for all their own shit, right? Yeah. Fair enough, whatever. But I'm like, if you've got the work there and you know that you're not packing up shop next week, why wouldn't you just offer them all full-time work? And like the argument is, oh, but the guys that I've got, they prefer to be on ABN. And I've had the talk with 1,000 guys before about the ABN structure and what it actually costs you to be on ABN, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't think they really understand, right? They just think it's more money. And
right?
it's like,
they just see the dollar on the paper, right?
Wait till the tax bill comes.
Right. So we've got a lovely little calculator that I got in my thing. It's a full breakdown in Excel and how I break it down. Right? Yeah. So I say to them, you put in this rate and then it correlates everything back down the chain and what you actually get.
Yeah.
And like once I've sat down and done that with them and I tell them and I'm like, listen, this is actually what you're it's making. The same. They go, oh, most of the time it's actually less.
Yeah. And because it's more admin.
They see, you know, but I'm getting $55 an hour on ABN. I'm like,
you know,
mate, you put $55 in the ABN cash. I'll say you run that number down. I said, you're probably making about $30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or you go on wages or you go on salary. You know what I mean? You get 40, 45,
and you 50. Don't need to you think don't about need nothing. The rest of it.
Yeah. You get your money in your fucking account every week. You take your holidays, done, dust, you get your super, everything paid for. Yeah. So, like for me, but then it's the same thing. I get it. Like, I actually had this conversation with a guy, and it's only something that I've learned the last couple of years as well. Is, you know, for the guys that are listening, they're like, don't expose us, but like child support and that sort of stuff. So, you know, a lot of guys that we've dealt with, that have come in that have got child support payments and stuff, they run through as an ABN structure
because
it allows them to fluctuate their costings
incomes,
accordingly, and they don't really love it. Like we had a guy a few months back that fucking I wanted to snag him like real bad. Like I wanted this guy in, perfect fit. Yeah. And he just turned to me and he said, no, I can't come in. So, you know, and I got to stick to my word and, you know, I keep everyone straight 180 across the board with the full-time structure. So, but that's what I've fucking found anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I've found like we've always employed our guys full-time. Like, you know, I feel like it gives them security, it gives you security and, you know, it's an even playing field.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's weird. I feel like...
But how hard is it? Sorry, just touch on that again. But how hard is it when you do have that security? Yes. But security also brings complacency.
Yeah.
That's what I found.
Yeah.
Right? It goes hand in hand. Those two things literally, they cross over each other over time. Mm. Right? People that are in job security also have job complacency. So for me, it's always been a constant battle on how do you want people to feel secure, but you do not want them to be complacent. And how do you manage that?
I think that's why we looked at we have started looking at the contract model.
Yeah.
Especially with some of our like newer builds, because it's like we can bulk out the majority of a frame or a clad or something, but then you need that detail component with in-house guys. But it's like, you know, that frame, you know, that you're not irreplaceable, you know, like that frame can always be contracted, like,
that do it,
you know. But yeah, it's hard. Like you want to keep a good juggle, because like, you know, we've found over the years, even through COVID and stuff, like we worked that many hours and that, like, you know, we worked ridiculously hard, myself and the boys I had. But it's, you know, like it's at some point it's not worth it, you know, like it's work, man. Like, you know, you've got families, you've got lives outside of work. Like, you know, I want everyone to have the same flexibility that I would sort of expect within my business to an extent, you know. Like I've built this business, I've worked my ass off for it, but I want them to be able to, you know, if they've got an appointment at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, whatever, I want them to be able to go, yeah, sweet, no worries, like, shoot off, go and do it, like, you know. So I want to have that relationship there, but you also don't want to have it to a point where it, you know, like you said, it does get taken advantage of.
And it's easy enough done. I feel like for me it's been a culture setting thing. I feel like if you can set the culture within the guys, that you can sort of manage that, and the guys will self-manage as well. But you know, I've fully fucking, you know, mainly stemmed from apprentices, but you know, you run our company back 18 months, like, fully, there was, you know, points in time where that complacency aspect came into it, and people were just like, oh well, you know, you can't find anyone else, and it was an employee's market. Very hard to get guys, as everyone's fucking well aware. The tables are shifting. But you know, and that was very true, so it was hard for me to do that, but now it's a lot easier. And
It's interesting. I feel like through COVID too, there was like so many new businesses, you know, like it was easy to start a business. I'd say to everyone, like, if I started my business in COVID, I'd have been laughing, like, you know, there was work everywhere, jobs everywhere. But, you know, like, I don't think those businesses had gone through the grind of starting a business when you had to actually quote things, and you had to actually manage relationships and chase up quotes, you know. Whereas now, like you said, it is starting the shift. Like, we get inbox, like, DMs from roofers and plasterers and painters and, like, all these new businesses that have started in the last, you know, 3 to 4 years. But now they're seeing the times turn a little bit when it is getting tight in the economy, and you know, the work is slowing down, and you actually need to price things and follow things up and be competitive, you know. So,
well, you got to also be, you know, I feel like the biggest thing is obviously like, that's something that we've learned as well, but I'm thankful enough that I've been through the life cycle, and like it is a grind. But you know, for us anyway, like, we're in the market with builders where we've got to compete. And there is only so much you can compete with, but it comes down to what you can offer, and you know your brand and everything like that, and the value that you can add. Because like, for a lot of guys, it doesn't, like, same business that you run, like, I bet you, like, you don't really give a fuck too much about the pricing component. You want to get the best value out of the guy. Like, if you got to pay an extra $5,000, you're not too fussed. You know, and you're not always chopping for the fucking, you're not always chopping at the knees for the best price.
And that's why I like a salary model, because it's like, if I have, you know, if I can budget a financial year, and someone's like, oh, like, I'd like this, I'm like, okay, sweet, I'll budget that, and it sits in that financial year, and we're good, you know, like, and we'll review it, like, every, I don't know, 6 months or 12 months or whatever. But, you know, like, I've learned that over the years too, like, you pinch pennies, like, in one area, but you end up paying for it somewhere else, you know. Like, if you want something done well and done good, you know, it comes at a price. You can't you can't get both, you know. You can't get budget and quality. They don't go together, you know. But
yeah, that's an argument for another day. But anyway, so back to you. So there was no real point in time where you thought to yourself that you know, you were going to take the leap and go out on your own. There was no one really in and around you that you sort of, you know, other than your businesses, and you knew that you wanted to create something.
I think I knew I wanted to get my builder's license, but
because what I'm trying to get at too is, like, as you sort of said, you're doing probably what every apprentice or chippy looks at, superstar developer, right? You know, I have to throw those quotations out there, right? So he's in the papers, Channel 9's coming for him. But anyway, so everyone looks at that and they see the shiny lights and they go, oh, you know, this would be great. Like, fuck, he does nothing anyway. He just sits behind the office. Like, what's he doing? Just having Irish coffees, right?
Yeah.
But they, what I want to know is, like, how did the early inception start? Like, did you, you know, were you literally just you and an apprentice contracting out? You were working for mum and dad shops doing decks, pergolas, bathrooms and that. Yeah. You know, all that
Stuff. Yeah, 100%. So I, I probably started the business... so like I said, I went and got my builder's license, I did the supervising, and then I probably did contract carpentry for 2-3 years sort of thing. And I floated around a bit, and I just wanted to have a bit of a break and step away from that. So I went and did technical, I guess, estimating and sales with, Dinas Australia. So they're a timber wholesaler. So I went and did that, and I think out of that, I sort of learned a lot about sales and relationships, and I feel like that was one of the key elements that probably set me up for a lot, maybe quicker success in my business. So I did that for 18 months. Like, I learned a lot about, you know, timber design, technical design. Like, I dealt with, you know, like a lot of businesses like Hutchies and Picaro and a lot of guys like that, and help them design floors and rafters and roofs and, like, you know, solve problems, sell timber. And then after that, I wanted to, I saw a big business, you know, and I wanted to start something for myself. I guess that was probably a pivotal moment. So after that, like, I sort of started doing the odd jobs on the side, you know, because I had that carpentry backing. So I'd pick up, you know, like a little deck or a little fence, and I'd do bits and pieces of a weekend, or, you know, slip it in after work. So I started doing that. And then I started getting rapport and, like, word of mouth. And, you know, I think I picked up, you know, a few bathrooms and things like that. And it was enough at that point that I thought, look, I'm going to step away. And I also straddled, like, subcontract carpentry, you know, in between doing a bathroom or a deck. Like, I'd do 2 days a week with a builder, and, like, three doing my own bathrooms and bits and pieces, and just managing that.
What was the roadmap like when you landed your first, like, large?
I think project, we probably landed, you know what I mean? Like, maybe like a $60,000 deck or something. And, you know, that was probably enough to service 2 months, 3 months worth of, you know, myself, my wage and workload, you know, which for me would be like, oh, like, I'd go home, you know, to my wife, like, I've got this big job, like, $60,000 deck. I've made it, you know, like, let's retire. Not really, but, you know, like, it's a big thing, you know. Oh, when you, 100%, when you're doing a $2,000 fence and a $10,000 bathroom, which would now be, like, a $25,000 bathroom, like, you know, you land a deck and it's, like, you know, it's something pretty, pretty cool. So I sort of, I guess I leveraged off that, and, you know, after leaving that, that sales role, I had a lot of skills from that with relationships. So I set myself a target. I think it was like every week or every fortnight, I'd set a meeting with, like, a real estate agent or a building designer or, you know, someone industry related that I could potentially leverage off for more workflow. So, you know, I'd meet, like, an interior designer,
just for, like a coffee or
just
something,
just a coffee, just anything, and a chat, just to start setting those foundations.
But you had the confidence already, because you were already sort of speaking,
I knew how to do that, like, I knew how to communicate, I knew how to build relationships. And that was probably the key driver in our early success. Like, we went from, I think our first financial year we did, like, I think it was like 200,000-300,000, which a big part of that was, like, I built a house for my mum out in Park Ridge, which was, you know, like, I think that was probably an easy opportunity, because it's like a family member, but I learned a lot out of that. But on the side of that, I did, you know, like, the decks and bits and pieces as well. So I think I went from, like, 200,000-300,000 in the first financial, to the next financial was like 500,000-600,000, and then the one after that was like 1.2, like 1.4. So, like, you know, I scaled, like, I wanted to double year on year till I get to a point, it was like year 3 or 4, like, I was like, right, I can't go from like 3 to 6, 6 to 12, like, it's not manageable. But I think we sort of sat at, like, you know, maybe 2-3 mil turnover on our like third or fourth year of trading, which was like maybe two like decent sized residential projects in a year. So I think for me to have that success, like in a 2 to 4 year time frame, like I attribute a lot to my skill set in relationships and sales.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think just setting out that goal of like, you know, building that network in the early 100%, stages.
That's actually such a good one. Like just something so simple, like just once a week, you know what I mean? Just lining it up to speak to someone.
Yeah, literally. Sometimes it was almost like a burden because I'd be like on my knees nailing off a deck and I'm like, fuck, it's 1:30. I've got to meet this real estate agent. And I'm like, I don't have time. I've got to finish this deck. But it's like, fuck. Like.
But isn't it funny how just like those little things like that just builds on every single time. And then 6 months might pass. You might completely forget about the person. And then boom. That one phone call. Oh, Mitch, hey, remember I spoke to you about blah, blah, blah.
Oh, it's huge. Like, yeah. Like you don't realize. Like, I've got a huge network like right now. Like most people wouldn't realize. But like from that role with Dindus, like, you know, in my business, you know, like I've got a massive network in the industry. Because I am like quite a social person, you know, like I talk to a lot of people, like I catch up, I make calls, I check in with people, you know. So I have a big network, you know, like we could, like I probably, and you know, I don't want to be like cocky, but I could probably scale the business right down, which is what I've done, and then scale it up like quite quickly, you know, with a few phone calls. But I think it's just building that rapport.
And I think that's like with any, you know, established business, I feel like most guys would say the same sort of thing. You get to a point in business where it's like you, as we were literally talking about off camera, you hold the pulse and it's like you can go to the next level, but then it's like you also have to, you know, there's a point there you sort of have to feel it within yourself as well. Like you can do it and you have the confidence to do it and you know that you can. But it's whether or not you want to.
And it's knowing where your capacity can sit and what's required for that, you know. Like we did, like prior to COVID, like we scaled, like I said, like dramatically. I knew how to scale, but I didn't know how to manage and run a business effectively, you know. Like I did everything myself. I did, you know, I did the project management, the supervision, the estimating, the pricing. Like, you know, I did everything. And I got to a point there, like I burnt myself out, like, you know, hugely. Because I didn't know how to have, you know, the right management in a business. You know, which is what, like where we got to. And I scaled that right down, you know, the last, I'd say, you know, the last maybe 18 months, like we scaled the business down and like did nothing. I actually stepped away and I took a business development role with Master Builders Queensland, which is what I needed at that point. But over that period of time, again, like I was pretty fortunate to see and talk to a lot of businesses and, you know, like I saw the structures that, you know, you physically can't run a large scale building company without help. Like you, you need a project manager or a supervisor or, you know, an estimator. Like it's not physically possible. Like a lot of builders do it. You know, they might get to where we were at, like, you know, maybe 2 to 4 like nice builds a year. That's it. Like you're capped. You literally like one person.
But some guys like that as well. You know what I mean? Like we do with each their own, where they like, stay, they love to stay in that because they know that they can it's control comfy. That.
And which is, I guess, where we're at. And like for me, I don't want to be wearing those four hats. Like I got a supervisor now that I've got on. Like he's awesome. Like really helpful for our business. I budgeted that like if we scale 1 or 2 more projects, I want to employ a project manager because that allows me to sit in our business where I want to sit, like mentally and you know like with my own work life balance too. But it's just those learnings, like, you know, over 7-8 years in business, you sort of realize that like you can do all those things yourself. You're just not going to have time for your family.
Well, you got other, like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's a full fucking circle. Like, your kids, you get married, like, there's all this sort of stuff. And if you, you know, don't get me wrong, guys have done it. They still do it themselves and they're still married with kids and that. But I feel like you eventually learn that, like, for us anyway, like, I've had to get things to where they are to enable me to live a life
because, that you want to enjoy
because like I was at the point where I was working 10-hour days, 5 days a week, Saturdays, you know, we got a public holiday tomorrow, You know, it was funny. Yeah. I actually said to my wife, I was like, fuck, I'm actually taking the public holiday off like everyone else. You know what I mean? Where normally, as I said to her, 100%. Yeah. She'd be the first one to tell me like, oh, normally you'd just be sitting in the office and doing whatever. So, but it's almost like forcing myself to act like an employee and be like, nah, like, I'm going to take the public holiday like everyone else. So, you know.
Because like, why shouldn't you though? You know, like.
Exactly. But
the,
it's just taking.
The boys do. Like they get their weekends and it's like.
But then in the same breath as well, you know, I say that now, but. But the guys that are starting out, like we can both vouch for it as well.
Yeah.
Right. There's no 100%. There is no fucking easy. No. There is no easy way out. Like you can't be expecting to be like, all right, I'm going to go register my business now. And I picked up this bathroom, but I'm going to, you know, not put in any more effort. You know, you might not have the work there, but then as Mitch just said, you need to line up meetings with phone calls.
You need to put signs up, put roads.
Like, fuck, man, I was literally, we used to walk the streets with brochures.
Drop pamphlets,
you know what I mean?
Done that.
You get on, so, you know, all that sort of stuff. Door knocking, fucking signs, this, that, and the other.
Five pages, I've done,
Well before Marketplace and fucking community pages, but, you know, Gumtree, that was a good one, So,
I started my quote register at 100 because I didn't want people to think that I hadn't quoted any jobs before. So I started at 100. Yeah. I didn't want to start at 1. Yeah. So I was like, I'll start at 100. I'll go 101, 102. I think at the moment it sits at like 400 and something.
Yeah.
So in the space of like 7-8 years, I've priced between 350 to 400 jobs.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I think in the last 3 years, it's sat between 350 to 400.
Mm.
So that 250 projects are priced in the first like 4 or 5 years. And that might be between a fence, a deck, like a new house, like a complete new house, like a $1 million build. I've probably got 15 of them in there that I probably built two of them. So I'd say there's probably maybe $30 million worth of work that I've priced in the last 6 or 7 years. And we've probably only done 15 mil of it or something. So, or 10 of it, you know, probably more actually. If I look at it, it's probably 50, 60 mil worth of work of price. But like I priced so many jobs and it was only a shift maybe I'd say 3-4 years ago where we stopped pricing for free and, you know, we started charging for quotes for whole quotes.
And this has been a thing as well. Like I feel like that it comes hand in hand. Like for me, I feel like every business has a point in time where you have to charge for free quotes.
Yeah.
I not charge for free quotes. You have to quote for free. Because
there's
like
that pivotal moment. It's like, where do I allocate my time? 100%.
Like, and I've had conversations with guys in the DMs and they're like, oh, you know, I've been running for 18 months and, you know, I'm pricing all this. Like, at what point do I start charging for quotes? And I'm like, well, at the point when you're willing to lose the work, that's when you do 100%. It. Because, you know, I literally said to him in the thing, I sent him a voice message. I literally said to him, example is, you got a $1.5 million job sitting in front of you, right? If you're willing to walk away from that and just not do it because they can't accept that you're going to charge them $3,000 to quote it or whatever it is, then
you need to.
If you're not comfortable with it, then don't do it.
Yeah.
And I said, he's like, oh, wait, how do I know? I said, you just will know. Yeah. There will literally come a point, and the same with you, the same thing. There'd be jobs coming across your thing, but you would know that if this person's not going to pay for the quote, well then, you know.
It says a lot about that person as well. Yeah. Like, you know, if they're going to spend $1.5 million, but they can't invest, you know, over, say they get 2 or 3 builders, they can't invest $8,000 or $10,000 between 2 or 3 builders to get an accurate pricing and someone who actually cares about what they're putting on paper.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Then it says a lot about that client and it's maybe a red flag and they should probably walk away. But yeah, like I put in so many hours. Like you said, like, you know, you've got, I'd do 80, 90 hours a week. It might be 6 a.m. on site nailing off a deck. And then, you know, it's 1:30 meeting a real estate agent to network. And then it's like 6:30, you're in at Bunnings loading the ute up for the next morning, you know. And then it's like when we had our daughter, I remember I'd be in at like 1 a.m. you know, with her on my lap,
yeah,
like rocking her as I'm like pricing a job or something. Yeah. Like,
but isn't it funny? You look back, like you think about that now, and you're like, fuck,
I would not do that
now. Like, but it's funny though. Yeah. Like you think about it now, and you're like, fuck, I couldn't do that now.
Mm.
But then, like in the reality, when you're in the moment,
yeah,
when your mind is just like, that's where you're gonna go. Like there is no, like you just fucking make it happen.
Yeah,
like, you know, whether you're wrong, you're rocking your kid, you fuck, like this whole. You need 8 hours of sleep. Like, fuck. Hey, you don't need 8 hours of sleep. You will survive. Yeah, like, 100%. It's fine. Just fucking rough through it. Like, you don't.
I'm actually a bit different now with my hours, eh? Like, I'm super flexible with them. And it's like, and I've allowed myself to be a bit more flexible, like, within a work week as well. Mm. Like, it might be like a Sunday night or a Saturday night. And it's like, I can't sleep. It's 3 a.m. And I'm like, fuck, I'm just going to go down and jump in the office and punch out 2 hours, you know, because what am I going to do, lay here for 2 hours or go and punch out 2 hours and then, you know, on Tuesday morning I can take my daughter to kindy at 8 o'clock and like I allocate that 2 hours in the middle of my week, you know. Yeah. So it's, I try and be flexible with myself because I know, you know, like years past I'll be like, no, I need to be on site at 6 a.m. I need to like show the boys on there, like I'm doing the same as them, but it's like I'm not doing the same as them. Like I'm doing more hours, after hours, like flexible hours, like, you know, so that's why I try and allow myself to have that flexibility in my life.
And you soon realize that they don't actually give a fuck.
Nah.
You know what I mean? Like, and it's almost a battle within yourself. Like something I've had to learn the hard way as well is that deep down, they don't actually care. As long as they're getting the jobs through, they're getting paid, they get to do their thing.
Yeah.
You know, for my guys, man, every Friday they're going to golf, they're fucking, they're doing their thing. Like, but I don't care as long as the job's getting done. So, like, in regards to me being there, even though they'd be like, oh, it'd be good for you to come and say hello.
Yeah.
Like, deep down, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It's more of just a thing within yourself that you feel.
Yeah.
That
it's a guilt thing within yourself.
You're you know, guilty,
you're like, I need to show up, I need to show I'm doing the same. But it's like, you're not the same. Like you
don't need to prove. You don't need to prove nothing.
You don't need to prove anything to anyone. You know, like the only thing you need to prove is for your family. You know, like that you were. You know, if your daughter's grows up, she's 20 and she doesn't remember you being around. Well, that's the only thing you need to prove is that you need to be.
And a good thing that I looked at, like this is something that I've learned as well, is that you know, I didn't need to prove anything to anyone. I think the only real thing that I had to prove was to my wife that, you know, all the fucking shit that I was doing before and the long nights and all this sort of stuff and the money stresses and that was eventually going to pay off. Like, I wasn't going to be doing that forever. And that was probably the biggest driving point and something that, you know, I was speaking to some, you know, consultants that we have in that and they literally say the same thing. They're like, at the end of the day, your family's going to be the one that's going to be there forever.
100%.
So, and you know, if you're...
Everyone fucking, else is just noise. Like,
yeah, like if you're like, love my team, love my staff, everything like that, right? Yeah. But they all know it at the end of the day as well.
And it's the same for them. Like, and that's why I said it. I try and offer a two-way street, you know, like at the end of the day, like their family is going to be there forever. 100%. Like I'm not going to be here for them, you know, forever. So like, you know, if they need to do something with their family or whatever...
Do it. You know,
you like,
know what I mean? I got guys now that they got their own families. They're the only working, they're the only one that works and that sort of stuff. So then I hold like a lot of responsibility on my shoulders for that as well.
Yeah.
It's only been very recent that that sort of happened and it's something that I've had to mature with as well.
Yeah.
And it drives me to do what I do, even if I'm not in the office all the time.
Yeah.
But I get, you know, in 5 hours, I can get done 10 hours that I used to do, like, you know, just procrastinating and stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I hold that weight on my shoulders. But yeah, like I always say to the guys as well, if you got appointments, you got anything, like, go and fucking do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. Like, doesn't bother me.
Because I'm going to do the same.
100%. Like, you know what I mean? And then it's like, you know, their family and everything comes first. And I'd be stupid. As an employer, you'd be stupid to think otherwise.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, for the guys out there that drill their apprentices and, you know, their staff and that, like, you're an idiot because, you know, it's never gonna happen. And I feel like if you can lean the other way and say to them, listen, like, this is how we run it here in our business, you know, if you need to take time off or whatever, just let me know.
Yeah.
You know, I got guys that literally will ring me, you know, whenever, like, I think last week, one of the guys, he rang me just like at 10 o'clock. One of his kids was in hospital. He just rang me. He goes, hey, I'm just letting you know I'm going to hospital. No worries. Done, dusted. I don't need to know why. I don't need to know when you're coming back to work, right? Or anything like that. I just said to him, I said, well, just text me if you're coming in tomorrow. He said, no worries, we'll do. That was it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He doesn't need to fucking justify it to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say nothing to him.
Yeah.
Right? I know that obviously there's shit going through. But it all comes back to like culture and stuff like that and team as well. Because I feel like you still have to have a handle on it because you can lose control of that. And I've had guys take advantage of that as well. And, you know, lean into that fucking... that nice, that, you know, that vulnerability that I would have. So it is very hard to manage that
little,
that little aspect. But,
100%. Yeah. It's a juggle, eh?
Oh, man. So, but anyway, all right. So carrying on. So we've just obviously spoken about where you're at now, you know, obviously the business that you've designed around your lifestyle and that now, right? How do you, I've got a question for you. You know, this is something that I like that I've been asking guys recently is how do you think socials, has socials played a part in anything in your business at all?
Hugely.
Yeah. How do you reckon?
Like, oh, I think the early days, like there's a, social media has a number of different components to it. Like as of recently, I guess we've probably pulled away from it a little bit and we don't rely on it as heavily. But in the early days, like, it played a part, like, A, for engagement, and I guess B, for reinforcement. You know, like if you're pricing a job and you are heavily present on social media and you show an image of rapport and, you know, like respect in that industry, it can like aid that reinforcement with a client. You know, like in the early days we'd price a job and we'd have a lot of I guess presence on social media, and we'd won some jobs just from social media. Like we'd have someone, you know, a lot of young guys might not recognize, but you might have a client sitting in your followers that is not going to be a client for a year, 2 years, 3 years, you know, like they might sit there and follow you and appreciate what you're doing. And then in like 2 or 3 years time, they go, hey, I want to build this house. Like I've got, you know, this, I want to do a $2 million build. I've been following you for 2 years. Yeah. Oh yeah. Cool. Sweet. I don't even know who you are, but yeah, let's go.
All the selling's no longer needed. You know what I mean? You don't feel you've like
sold it, yourself.
You've already sold 2 years, it. You know,
now you've just reinforced it along the way. Like you've established that engagement with your audience, and without even knowing it, you've reinforced it for the past 2 years. And now you've had that job won for 12 months, but you didn't know it, you know, like, so social media, I think for us, was a pivotal point in our business for that, for that first like 2 to 4 years.
How did you go about handling the, because I feel like this is something that resonates with the guys that listen, is how did you go about comparing yourself? Because obviously in that 2-4 year period, everyone would know that there's a lot of people out there that have gone really well on social media and they jumped in early.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was a bit of a battle to start with comparing yourself to others.
Oh, 100%.
You know what I mean? You sit in the car and you fuck it all, you know, oh, I haven't got this. And
It's, I think maturity and like, you know, obviously getting older and, you know, appreciating different things in life. I think maturity, you know, helps you in that comparison perspective, you know, like I used social media heavily for the business, but in my personal life, like I'd barely touch it, you know. It might be once every 3 months, 4 months, like I'd put a post up or something.
Because these kids now, like you get, and they get TikTok.
Yeah, and TikTok stuff. And bloody.
Yeah, you know what I mean? YouTube. Like, yeah, oh, it's full on. It's like, it's literally just like.
Now we sound older. Yeah, these
like,
kids.
Oh, man. Like, it's literally just like. They're getting it constantly fed into their brain that, you know, they're not
in it's the position literally that like they a should drug. Be in. Like it is literally like a drug.
Yeah.
You know, and even TikTok and YouTube, it's designed like, you know, you might be watching a video and there's like three other videos like scroll like being suggested and loading up next, like ready to go, to be fed in, you know, like it's yeah, it's bad. I guess everyone goes through stages. They try and like engage with social media and then they like retract and have a break, you know. But I think from a business perspective, like social media is key. Like depends on what extent and what goal and what you're trying to target. I think for us, like I've pulled away and retracted a lot from social media, but like where our business model's at the moment and where it's presently headed, like I need to re-engage it, not to a massive scale, but I need to build like a rapport as a builder developer in the industry. You know,
I feel like it changes. Like, and I feel like a lot of guys don't, you know, you don't need to be scared of change either. Like for us, like I always say to Nick, the same content that's coming out now is not going to be the same in 12 months. Like it is okay to go through the highs and lows of changing and how you want your content to look and how you want engagement to be. And
100%.
You know, there's guys out there that were doing massive amounts of content, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. What do they do now? Not much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that sounds like ours.
But
like
they've built the thing. Brand, and they've built the brand of that, so they can sort of back away. Like it's, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, I guess we invested heavily in content. Like we'd spend, I don't know, maybe $10,000-$20,000 a year on videographers, and like we'd boost like Facebook and Instagram paid posts like almost every second. Like I'd pump, you know, behind paid posts, but now I don't. Like I just, you know, like we have that brand established in the market. I feel it's not huge, but you know, it is enough within our networks. But I think from a builder developer perspective, which is now where our business is heading, I think I need to reestablish. Like I crashed our website 18 months, 2 years ago, because I didn't want people ringing me. Like I wanted to, I needed a break, and I wanted to get away. Like I didn't want, you know, clients ringing me and people trying to get me to price jobs. So, you know, I crashed our website. I pulled right back from social media. But I, like now I've just started pricing, getting a website rebuilt, you know, like reestablishing some social media brand and footprint. Because, you know, in like 8 or 9 months, we're going to bring a house to the market. And I need to show, I feel like it's wise to show a footprint and a brand in the market. You know, because if you come to market with a brand new house and that builder doesn't even have a website, you know, like I feel like potential buyers are going to want to
100%
do that research and find that establishment in the market. So it's funny, like you said, it goes through waves, and you know, it just depends on where you're, what you're targeting and what brand you're trying to establish as well, I guess. So
it's been massive for us. Like we've, you know, same thing again, like the following's not huge, but our engagement is high, as, and it's like, you know, for us, like I reckon it's a benefit, but for the young guys that are in there and they are, got the socials, and you're comparing yourselves to fucking every man and their dog, and you want that 79 series and you want the Silverado and you want the nice trailer and you want all that, like just understand that, like just stay in your lane. Like it's totally fine. You don't need to be comparing yourself. Like,
100%.
Like fucking, like I love to say, like, you know, social media is one of those things. You're only ever going to see what you want to see. You know, you don't actually know the context of it. You're only going to see that 15 second clip or that photo or that. You don't actually know what's behind.
Yeah, 100%. All
that. And you know, for me, it's been something that I've had to fucking learn, because like even I, not that I ever got, I'm never depressed or anything like that, but like I would always compare where I was in my point in life to someone else. Why wasn't I there?
Yeah.
Why didn't I, you know, why can't I afford that? Why can't I do that? And it's put me in predicaments before that has been bad.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Oh man, like I said before, like I feel like it's taken me a lot to learn that you need to remove yourself from a situation and just even appreciate where you're at, or, you know, like what you're doing in the present. Like, you know, everyone's so focused on what's in front, but, you know, often you need to step aside and just look at how far you've come and what you've done.
Yeah.
Even in the smallest achievements, you know, like if you're an apprentice and you get qualified, like, you know, sometimes like, it might be good to get your builder's license and keep going, but, you know, like go and have a weekend away and celebrate that you just finished your apprenticeship, you know, like, that's a milestone in itself. So it's, everyone's guilty of like looking for the bigger and shinier object, but you need to just step back sometimes.
Yeah, I'm going
to
do my own developments one day and all this sort of stuff. Like, but anyway, so, but yeah, just understand that it's all good. Everyone, everyone's in their own sort of path. Like even me and Mitch now, like talking to you guys, same thing. You know, we're just on our own little thing. I'm not comparing myself to him. He's not comparing himself to me. You know, you just stay in your own thing.
Just got to appreciate and be happy where you're at.
That's it, man. That's it.
Set your own goals and keep at it.
So, all right. So fast forward to now, we're getting there. This has actually been really good. Fast forward to now, you know, we've briefly touched on you saying that you've now built a business that you obviously enjoy, and it's giving you the lifestyle that you want. What does that lifestyle look like? Like, what are you fully off the tools now?
It's always a juggle, eh?
Yeah.
Our supervisor at the moment has just had a baby, so he's off for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'm sort of juggling back, doing a few bits and pieces, but
yeah.
I guess I just want, time for family is a big one for me. You know, like we've had a lot of, personal, losses sort of thing. But I think time for family is a big one for me. Like I want to, allocate time for myself, like my own mental health and my own wellness. And family is a big one, man. Like you really need to appreciate where you're at and, be in the moment with
where you're at. Same with me. It's for me at the moment, probably the biggest thing is just being able to be there for my kids and understand, have that flexibility there.
Yeah.
And, for the guys that are listening that have got normal jobs and they got kids and that, you just gotta find I was having this conversation the other week with a guy, he doesn't work for us. He works for another builder.
Yeah.
But he's a chippy, and he's fairly good chippy, fairly good builder. I've been trying to poach the guy for fucking ages. So if you're listening.
Yeah.
But we've just been mates for ages, and he's been telling me. So he's now got his second kid, and he never ended up jumping ship and doing his own thing. But great chippy, great leaning hand. He's got a really good paying job. And he's struggling to manage time at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
He discussed with me on what I'd recommend. Obviously we live two different lifestyles at the moment, but I just said to him, he needs to find his normal. And even though he's every day, 5 days a week, he's 6:30 till 4 or whatever like that, turn his phone off on the weekend.
Yeah.
When he is home, try to give as much effort as he can to be present where his feet is. Don't be, and he needs to communicate that with his boss as well, because he's getting phone calls and stuff outside of work and that. And for you guys that are listening, you just need to learn to be present and take advantage of the situation that you are in. Because even though we're talking about us having flexibility to be able to, drop off the kids and stuff, everyone tends to forget, we've also got all the stress that comes with that.
Yeah.
It's not all fucking roses and lollipops.
Yeah.
You do sit down, for me, I sit on the edge of the bed and, am I going to make payroll this week? And there's a big stress there, And it goes on my shoulders as well. I've got people that depend on us every single week.
Yeah.
So, just understand that everyone's got their own stress, but you just got to find what works for you.
Yeah,
so,
100%. And it's just time, I've learned, and even at the moment, I've public holiday, my supervisor's off, we got a 4-month-old baby.
Yeah.
I used to allocate a lot of time for myself. I go for a ride in the morning. I do a lot of Wim Hof breathing and, doing ice baths and things like that. But I haven't done that for probably 5-6 months because I am at a higher capacity at the moment than what I want to be and what I enjoy. But like I said, we got a 4-month-old, I've got guys off, it's just a hectic time.
Yeah.
But, you've just got to manage those periods and get through it and then get back to where you sort of want to be and where you want to enjoy your work-life balance. So, it's definitely needed.
All right. Sweet. Well, we've got a little segment that we love to do. Don't shoot me for the questions because Nick has come up with these questions. So we love to do a little bit of segments, just a fire round where we just like to ask you some questions. They're obviously in relation to the industry. And you just got to try to answer them the best that you can. So
tricky.
Just to give the listeners a little bit of, a little bit of insight into you a little bit. So, all right. So what's your favorite tool on the job site?
Oh, it's got to be the framer, eh? I hate doing fix outs. I got ADHD and fix outs just... through my head in.
Oh, man.
I just love getting on the
framer. Do you know a little thing that I love? It's like a little bit, it's a weird thing. Framer's my favorite too. Winter's day, right? It's a cold day, cold morning, sun's up. It's not raining like it is at the moment, but nice day, winter's morning. You shoot the frame and you smell the gas. to me, right, to me, when I smell that, I'm like, man, this is like fucking, oh, it just gets me like.
Yeah, I just.
I'm just fucking, yeah, I turn to the apprentices, I'm like, the day that I stop fucking loving that smell, you know what I mean?
Oh, good.
Put me in a casket, yeah. I'm done. Yeah.
I don't know, I just love standing frames, trusses, yeah. I just, yeah.
It's just a good environment.
I feel like you get a lot of productivity in a short period of time.
And you stand back, like it's one of those, I'm like digging a hole and stuff. It's like one of those jobs where you look back and you're like, ah, oh, like at the end of the day, you've busted your balls, but hey, look.
Framer. Yeah.
All right. Coffee or energy drink in the morning?
Definitely a coffee. Went away from energy drinks years ago. They'll give you kidney stones, I think.
Whoopsie. All right. What's the most satisfying part of your job?
Oh, that's a tricky one. Flexibility, I think.
True.
Yeah.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is very satisfying. All right. Name one thing you can't start your day without.
Oh, I want to say coffee, but I miss it a bit lately. Yeah. Just trying not to wake my daughter up. Which annoys me. I really miss that coffee on those days.
Just drive through.
Yeah.
Rappers in the morning.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received? What's one thing that sort of stuck with you?
I think it's the one thing that I've probably learned over the past few years is you just need to, I guess, recognize your own capacity, you know, like you need to know your limits. And know where you can function to effectively.
Yeah.
And once you know that, like you'll be a lot better operator.
Yeah.
And delegate, you know, where your capacity's capped. Like you need to hand out that load because you can't do everything yourself.
Yeah. So just understanding yourself a little bit more.
Yeah. Bit of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest thing that I think anyone should really invest in.
Yeah, sweet. So other than developments and stuff on the cards for MitCon, what else are you coming up? Are you guys basically, you know, you're just doubling down on that? Is this your first big one that you guys got coming up? Or
yeah, we've done two. We did one like personal place development. Yeah. That was like probably $1 million knockdown rebuild, $1 million build.
Yeah.
Did that, sold it. Yep. We've got another one underway at the moment, a personal one.
Successful?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So we did really well out of that.
Yeah.
To be honest, like that was mid-COVID. We lost a lot of money in the business.
Yeah.
Like fixed price contracts, we just hemorrhaged out the back of the business.
Yeah.
If we hadn't have done our own development at the same time, we'd probably be in a different position right now. I feel like that salvaged the business when it sold. So that was definitely beneficial. Property, I think like property is like huge asset to leverage, you know, to get in front. Second one we're doing at the moment, probably maybe 3 months off completion, whilst running a first commercial development over at Camp Hill. So
yeah, that's for yourselves.
Yeah, so it's completely under another business entity.
Yeah.
That'll be sold at the end of it. So
yeah.
So yeah, sort of three, I guess, effectively.
Yeah.
And then I want to try and roll this one into another, you know, commercial development end of the year, early next year, just to keep that sort of flow rolling.
Yeah.
Exciting
times there.
Yeah. I got a client build. They're good friends of ours. Like I told myself I'd steer away from client builds, but
yeah.
I actually just did complete a little extension for some really awesome clients. You know, and that was, you know, administered the contract correctly, you know, like did a lot of things right in the business, like I should have done maybe more so in the past. So that was a really rewarding experience. And then another big client build in Manly we're designing at the moment that we probably will end up building, but we'll just see how that eventuates. But
I guess it's one of those things, if you can get to a point where you're sort of not picking and choosing, but you're
a bit selective with projects, but it's like, you know, I say that, you know, I guess quite flippantly, but you know, it's been a extremely difficult road and battle, you know, like my first property I bought was a unit in Cooperoo for $300,000. I did a $10,000 reno at it, and at that point in time, like Cooperage Square was coming out the ground.
Yeah,
there was a unit oversupply, and when I bought it on the market, people were spending $100,000 more to buy a brand new unit.
Yeah,
there's heaps of units on the market, and I sold it for $320,000. Like, I literally got my money back and made a touch on it, you know. Yeah. And then my wife saved a heap of money at that point and rolled that into, we bought a house in Holland Park, and it was like $600,000.
Yeah.
All our friends were like, you guys are crazy, like that's heaps, you know, like that's so much money. And then we sold it for like $850,000 or something, just on the cusp of COVID. And then bought another place in Manly, did that big build, knocked down reno, like did fairly well out of it. But yeah, it's just leveraging, you know. Yeah, it's
stressful nights.
Yeah,
it's a finance game.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it is a lot, you know, a lot of work, you know, a lot of time in the business, a lot of losses through COVID, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
no one ever talks about losses. Yeah. I never, you know, no one's going to, but it's like, you know, that's the stuff that fucking people don't understand.
We lost $150,000 between two contracts through COVID. You know, and we're sitting there like what do we do here? We ripped out of the mortgage, pumped it in the business, and finished. You know, we got two houses sitting out there, like two clients that are none the wiser that we paid to finish their houses, you know.
Yeah.
And then even at the end of it, they're like, oh, this is like a little scratch on my skirting board.
And that is what, what turned, that's...
I'm like, yeah, sick, I've just paid $80,000 to finish your house. Like,
and that's what fucking, I feel like that's what really turns you, be like, that turns you, that puts fucking, you know, stripes on your back. Like, you fucking, to swallow that pill is huge. Like,
oh, a lot of builders, like, didn't do that. Like, they just threw it in, packed it in, liquidate, like, but, you know, when you got two options, like, you got a fixed price contract, like, you go back to your clients, you have a fight, you whinge and moan, you end up in court, like, you know, it's a fixed price contract. At the end of the day, like, you will lose. Like, the law in Queensland isn't written to allow you to, you know, like, negotiate that contract when it's a fixed price contract. So we just sucked it up, lumped it on the mortgage, and you know, cracked on.
Yeah.
So I guess that was a hard pill to swallow. But if we hadn't have done our own development on our personal property at that point in time, like, I probably wouldn't have been in a different position. But
that's it, man. Like, you just got to keep fucking going, and that's business. Like,
yeah,
you know, 100%. For you guys that are listening, like, it isn't just being able to do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah,
rocking up, dropping your kids off, fucking, you know, having coffees all the time. Like, like, you got, like, that's it. Like, that is business. It is. That's the fucking hard stuff.
I think a lot of chippies and builders, like, and it's like, it gets bashed a lot at the moment, but it's so true. Like, you need to know your numbers, like, guys. Don't know.
Love that, eh? It's so fucking pumped at the moment.
Oh, like, but it's true. You it. Like,
know your numbers.
I didn't, like, it sounds dumb, but, like, I literally didn't know the difference between markup and margin for, like, probably 2 years of business.
Yeah.
I'm just cracking along. Oh, yeah, I'll just chuck 20% on it, but not knowing that 20%, you know, pulls down to 17 or 18, whatever it is.
Yeah. And then, I think 30% pulls down to, like, 20 something. It's like a calculator.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, if you don't know that, like, if you're doing $1 million bill, like, $1 million turnover, and, you know, you're pricing at 20%, but, like, you're actually losing 3 or 4% or whatever it is out the back at the end of your financial year. Like, you come to the end of the year, you do a P&L with your account, and you're like, fuck, why did I make no money this year? It's like, well, you're not pricing correctly, you know, like, you're not, but
and
yeah,
your costings and stuff like that. Like, a lot of guys don't actually know how to read it either. Like, even in your P&L, you know what I mean? You pump your numbers down. Yeah. You might net.
Yeah.
But are all your coatings in there? Like, have you net, is your net even your net? Like, everyone goes, oh, my net is X. And you're like, is it though?
Yeah.
Have you included your debt?
Yeah.
Have you included, and then you fucking really pump it all down. You're like, nah.
I think your numbers is a huge one for business, eh? Like, I, even when I was with Master Builders, like, I'd chat to a young chippy or something, just started out, got his builder's license, he's same thing, doing decks, this and that. Yeah. And I would try and data dump guys and give them as much information as I could to help them. Because I'm like, if I can give you, like, 3 years of knowledge and it saves you, like, fucking up, or, you know, losing money or losing your house, you know, like I'll do it, you know, hand over fist. But like I sat down and chatted to this guy and I'm like, oh, what are you, you know, like what are your pricing? What are your margins? He's like, oh man, I just do materials and, you know, and labor and then I just chuck 10% on it. And I'm like, well, where'd you get 10%? Oh, I don't know, just like, just 10%, you know? And I'm like, well, what are your overheads? Like, have you pulled a P&L? Like, you've been running for a year and a half now. Like, why don't you pull that first financial and, and actually see where you're running at? Oh, yeah, like, you know, I don't think it's sunk in, but, you know, it's like that dude could keep tracking for another 3 or 4 years and, like, at 10% with growth, like, your overheads get bigger, that 10%'s gone, like...
Yeah, you know, they're like, I'm definitely no fucking like, and that's something as well. As you go through business, you learn the ways.
Yeah.
And like for us, same thing. Like we've had massive growth. Staff, like office staff and that. So obviously your expenses go through the roof.
Yeah.
And all that sort of stuff. So everything has to adjust accordingly.
Yeah.
And you find your feet eventually, but
yeah,
you just hope that you do it sooner than 100%, later.
Yeah.
Because if it's too late.
I think the biggest thing for guys, if you're running your own thing, like with numbers and knowing your numbers, is just like pull a P&L every year. Like every time you do your end of financial or whatever.
Yeah.
Like
we do it monthly. Like
monthly. Sooner. But I feel like for a building company, like you can't really know that number until it's like you've done a whole year of trading. And
that's what I was saying to you at the start. Like some guys go 18, 24 months. Like
fuck. Yeah.
Like, this is a long time, like, to turn over, like, one job. And then you got, like, you got CP. Like, there's all this other stuff that comes into it, inflation and that. Like, fuck, there's no... Fuck, 4 years ago, no one was talking about inflation. You know what I mean? Like, it was there, but it was where it was, don't worry about it. Now, it's so relevant that, literally, like, fuck, you, if you're pricing a job that's going to run for 2 years and you haven't got a clause in there to accumulate for inflation, fuck.
Yeah.
You could do your ass just on inflation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like the job we're designing at the moment for these clients. Like they said, oh, what, like where's the price sit? And I said, oh, maybe about here. Like once we finish designing it, we'll run a cost and see where it's at. But like, when do you want to build it? Oh, maybe 12, 18, 24 months. I'm like, well, we need a budget 5 to 10% like inflation on that, on that contract value. Cause like based on COVID, like I ran some numbers like through the end of COVID there. And on one of those years, it was like 10%. Inflation in the building industry on that on that last year through COVID, but like that was maybe one of the worst. Like
even labor, labor fucking
yeah. So it's like if you're gonna price a job and it's a fair way out, like you need to factor that increase. But I guess it's hard. Like if you're pricing against other builders or someone else, like that almost needs to be another line item, you know. So it's like, why are you more expensive? Well, like here's your line item. That's you want to build it in 2 years, like. Yeah. It's another 10% or you know, we'll pull it out if it's not, but like it's there to allow for it. But.
Yeah, we'll never pull it out. No, we do. Yeah. All right, sweet. All right, well, I feel like me and Mitch could sit here for another hour and just yap away, but I hope you guys are listening, got some insight into what happens on site for Mick Connor and his building company and what he's doing. You know, he's obviously doing something really great. He's got some really, really good... lessons, and you know, even just from listening to him, fuck me, has he got a little bit of a journey. Like he's tried everything. So you know, for you guys, he's on Instagram, he's on socials, well he's going to be, so you know, and you want anything else, like reach out to him. He's a really great guy, and hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks, Mitch.
Thanks, mate.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If something hit home for you, it would mean the absolute world to us if you could like and share this podcast with someone else that would benefit from it. Tune into next week's episode, as this will be one that you don't want to miss.